Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Tuesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, 80s action star Colton Stone, and you. Good to be back from Psychoville. Interesting weekend in Denver. May have time to tell you about it if you care. Can tap the line, Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House. Let you do that, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Can find us on Twitter at Two Birds One Stone for Colton, at Schmidt underscore radio for me, and at Hail Varsity. As always, give that a follow. Great reveal yesterday of the Hail Varsity yearbook with Frosty on the cover. Love seeing that. Can't wait to get a hold of one. So that is some good news, as the College Football Bible is out. Your Hail Varsity yearbook on bookstores and stands very shortly. Can subscribe, of course, HailVarsity.com to do that. Take care of Dad this Father's Day. We are loaded up. Mitch Sherman going to be with us in 15 minutes. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet. And then longtime Nebraska assistant coach, strength and conditioning coach, now with Team Crawford. He's worked with Bud Crawford for a decade plus. Jamie Belt going to be with us in the second hour. Lots to get into. It is Husker Nation Tour Day number two. And that'll be good. Some interesting and pointed comments from Travis Fisher we'll get into. Good coverage from Derek Peterson, Greg Smith, Jacob Padilla on that up in Fremont. Also, some stuff from Coach Chenander. We have lists to discuss. The Big Ten coach rankings. The Athlon folks have put that out. And then the friends from 24/7 have a list, a top 10 of most hated national championship teams. Rack your brain. I'm sure you can come up with a couple of teams that won it all that you still don't like. So that is plenty to get into today. Colton, did you guys burn the house down yesterday?
No. I think we kept everything in one piece. So
Proud of you. We
stayed on air all the times that you were gone, so they didn't have to switch to national programming.
That's good, because somebody may have hurt somebody. Well, I would have paid somebody to hurt somebody, because you're much bigger, stronger, and faster.
How was Denver? How was Junior?
Junior played great. Very proud of him. He was good. His team went 1-2. Hell of a long drive to go west and back and go 1-2. And they lost to teams that, listen, man, they lost to teams that when the catcher overthrows the pitcher 9 out of 10 times, just trying to throw the ball back during warmups before you scream, coming down, you don't lose to those teams. You don't. Sorry. Helicopter dad raising both hands. It was frustrating. But I did find out what happened. You've heard horror stories about either your parents or maybe you've experienced it yourself going out to Colorado back in the day for a Nebraska-Colorado game. And maybe somebody shot out your windows. Maybe somebody slashed your tires. Maybe someone went beer bottle to the back of your head. You've got horror stories, decades of them, from the Nebraska-Colorado rivalry. Well, all those pukes and trust funders that went to Colorado and were belligerent and snotty and physical, they've had children, and their children have had children, and that's who we played on Sunday. The parents were worse than the kids, and by the way, when their kids gave up an extra base hit, they would cry on the field.
Oh.
I mean, that crap. I lost it. Okay, I'm going to move on because I'm losing my mind. I'm off topic. I'm off target. So Denver sucked, except for the Rockies game. That was fun.
Oh, good.
6 home runs and a streaker.
Wow.
Who was clothed. That was
how much you pay for tickets?
Wife paid for them.
Oh, well,
I got out of that
worth
one live.
It. They were worth it.
No, it's fun. It's fun. Okay, news and notes real quick. Friday Night Light Camp going to be open to the public. That is good news if you're a Nebraska football fan. What you got June 15th this Friday and then a week from Friday. So gates will open to the stadium at 5 o'clock. Can enter through gate 3. That's the southwest corner or the northwest corner, gate 11. And that is what you'll do for that. All seating for the Friday Night Lights camp will be in the lower bowl of West Stadium. And the West Stadium concourse will not be available. So if you're a Nebraska football fan, you want to go cheer on and observe kids coming to camp, go for it. 7,000 fans last year, over under on what they hit this Friday with the frost factor.
10, I think.
I'm going to go 12.
You think so?
I'm going to go 12,000 for this Friday. If it's a real good time, we might see 15 a week from Friday.
Yeah, I think
combined attendance, you're going to get 20.
Oh, yeah. I think that's probably a good number. If they get a decent turnout this Friday and, you know, it what is on the field and if people have a good time, like you said, I think the numbers bump next Friday.
Let's talk about Eric Chenander and Travis Fisher. They were in Fremont, day two, leg two of the Husker Nation Tour. And you have this attitude and this swag that is coming right now from the coaches. You have a list of expectations. You have a belief and a theory on what needs to happen defensively. I love the quote I saw on Twitter, rent is due every day. So, first and foremost, Jacob Padilla tweeted this out 45 minutes into the Q&A session. A black shirt question was asked today. Are you going to hand him out or not? Nobody has earned a black shirt yet, according to Coach Chenander. And he may hand him out after a game or a second game. You got to earn them, and they can be ripped away. And Chenander's had contact and conversation with Coach McBride. We've covered that with Coach Charlie in depth with the black shirt situation. I'm all good with that. Pretty much my take on the black shirt and the mystique of the black shirts and what needs to have happen with the black shirts. If the Godfather okays it, then I'm good. Whatever Coach McBride says and believes with the black shirts, the tradition and what it is and what it means, then that is gospel, period. And Coach Chenander's is within every bit of motivational tactic and tool to get guys to play up to a certain standard and level. And if he doesn't think he's seen anyone earn it yet, good. And then let's get into Travis Fisher here. The guy had a meeting Monday with his secondary guys, corners and safeties. And the Cliff Notes version of it goes as such. You have guys that are young that are expecting to play this year. Cam Taylor, Cameron Jones, C.J. Smith, Braxton Clark. He wants the older guys to hear that. And then you need to act and respond accordingly. It's not your job to give up the position. Let's make it competitive. And the reality is this for the Nebraska defense in 2018. You're going to need to stop the run in the Big Ten, yes. But you're going to need to get after the quarterback to be the ball-hawking type of defense you want to be. The sole goal of the defense is to get the football back for the offense. And offenses are matched by their defense. If you have a run-heavy offense, you're going to have, theoretically, a very good run-stuffing defense because you go against it and you practice it. If you have an offense that throws the ball around, theoretically, you're going to be better against the pass and you're going to need to be able to get after the quarterback. Well, the Frost offense, this blur offense, you know it and I know it. The goal is to get 80 to 90 plays. Because once you get over that 68 to 70 number, that's when fatigue sets in. That's when you can wear out, wear down, stomp an opponent because they are just gassed. Good luck with the depth and the level of talent on your twos and threes matching what your ones are supposed to and capable of doing. So you had some pointed comments, some real honest takes and thoughts from Travis Fisher today. He wants heart from his cornerbacks. The fact that the guy's saying he wants heart from his cornerbacks is a slap in the face enough, whether it's just a Monday night meeting. But going public with that is genius. It's needed. And it is right in step with this coaching philosophy from head coach on down to assistant. You're going to be told what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. That is the single biggest battle you have with Nebraska football right now. How things were done, how things are going to be done. And you've got this gray area of makeup space when it comes to buy-in and strength and conditioning and scheme change and all of that. You have practice habits that you're trying to undo. You have a certain level of tenacity, accountability, and leadership that you want that you're trying to get guys up to speed and become. Okay? And don't kid yourself, that is the issue. There's a lot on the plate. But when it comes to your defensive backs coach talking about your cornerbacks need heart, they need toughness, they need technique. You want to be aggressive, you want to play aggressive, you need to have that in you or be made to be that. And right now you got some guys lacking the consistency of being a killer out on that corner spot. That's the truth of it. And you have three guys right now that Coach Fisher talked about today at the Husker Nation Tour that are on notice. And they know it, and now the public knows it, so you can either respond or get replaced. Eric Lee, DeCap, Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. Those are the three that are on notice. Get better, or the freshmen are going to play. Got to have that mentality. And the guys coming in here aren't here to wait. They're not here to sit around. And they're not here to be babysat. That's kind of the deal. Keep your job, win your job, or lose your job. Busy right now. Call back. 466-377-6800. 825-5865. And the thing with Travis Fisher here, him being candid with his defensive backs, and the number that is just it's a double gut punch. Mm-hmm. 7.3 yards per completion. That's what Nebraska allowed. It was worse than the Big Ten. That's not all on Boodle, Lee, or Lamar. But they need to make a play and tackle and be aggressive. That's the biggest thing. That's a monster issue right now with Nebraska. And you have guys, and he was specific about Lamar Jackson, sometimes drifting back to old habits. Mm-hmm. And when I see that, when I hear that, immediately comes into being passive on putting your nose in there to make a tackle. You can't have that. And you got to have guys with heart, and you need guys, as Fisher talked about, that'll work their butt off. And if you don't have heart, it won't show up when the lights come on. You can't just turn the switch on, turn the switch off. And they'll play guys who have a whole bunch of heart over guys that may have more talent because they trust and know what they're going to get out of the guys who are going to bring it every day. So that was very, very revealing today by Travis Fisher, the defensive backs coach, and what Nebraska is really in for in the secondary spot. He needs eight. He wants eight corners to rotate in because of that play count that you're likely going to see, likely going to face defensively. And you don't have a ones, twos, and threes. Everybody's got to be at a certain level, up to par, and be a one. And it's about attitude. So specifically, Lamar Jackson was touched on and asked about the number one recruit, number one ranked recruit in the 2016 class. How is he this year? How is he this spring? And according to Fisher, he came a ways. Not there yet. Still going back and forth with what he did last year. He's inconsistent. But he's showing it that he has the ability to be more physical. He has the ability to be there. And as Coach Fisher put it, it's not a blank body out there. He's actually got some potential. That's what you're teased with a lot of these guys. Antonio Reed, he's not mentally there. Physically, he can do as much as any safety in the country. But Antonio's one of these guys, according to Fisher, you got to stay on and keep on. He'll be a really good one. But if you just kind of go hands off of him, that's when he may drift a bit. Aaron Williams, he'll be ready for the fall. He had shoulder surgery. And Deontay Williams, the best athlete out of the group. Markell Dismuke. Markell's a dude that's always been around the football. He's a guy who's played special teams. He's a guy that will stick in and come up and play at a high level in run support. I love his aggressiveness. But when it comes to offseason and weight room commitment, Fisher's comments, his body doesn't look like it's been in Nebraska for 2 years. We'll get that corrected. He left no stone, no corner unturned. Pushing buttons, making guys better. Thoughts from Coach Fisher on the Husker Nation Tour. We'll get caught up with Mitch Sherman next to Tail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Rick Pizzo is coming up next hour. Hail Varsity Radio. Welcome in with ESPN.com and magazine. Mitch Sherman at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, how we doing?
Doing well. Chris, how are you?
I'm all right, man. Let's hit College World Series, and we'll talk about some of the Husker Nation Tour. What do you think of the field as you look at this 2018 CWS as it gets underway this weekend in Omaha?
Yeah, good to start with this, since it's pretty much taken over my life for the next 2 weeks. So, it actually already has begun to do so. The field looks good. You know, you don't have that underdog school that could have come with Stetson or Tennessee Tech, but Washington is here for the first time here in Omaha for the first time after winning a super regional at Cal State Fullerton and a regional at Coastal Carolina, the 2016 national champ. So definitely some Cinderella qualities with the Huskies, and then a lot of a lot of powerful teams. You've got Texas back in a familiar place under second year coach David Pierce in the year that Augie Garrido passed away. So there'll be some poignant moments there for sure. There would have been some poignant moments even without Texas or Cal State Fullerton here. Cal State Fullerton is not, but Augie Garrido coached the Titans to a national championship also. Would have been some poignant moments with Augie and his passing as he's remembered at this College World Series. Even if the Longhorns had not made it, this will only enhance that. North Carolina is back, a team that Omahans got very familiar with about a decade ago. And then they've dropped off the CWS map for a while, but they're back. Florida's back as the defending champ. Oregon State is back with three first-round draft picks in the lineup. You've got Texas Tech. You've got Mississippi State, another kind of underdog mentality with an interim coach in the dugout. Arkansas and Dave Van Horn will be here. So I've covered just about everybody, but I think everybody brings an intriguing storyline.
Let's get into Van Horn and Arkansas. And he's been to the CWS quite a few times, and I think there's a soft spot and really some longing for a lot of Nebraska baseball fans about what Van Horn did and wanting Nebraska baseball to get back to that level. What's your take on Van Horn and his time down in Arkansas? He's good enough to get to the CWS, but he hasn't brought home a title. Is that a shock to you, or have his teams and programs always been good enough to get there, but maybe outmanned when it comes to Omaha?
Oh, they've made some noise here. His two Nebraska teams did not, mm-hmm. And I believe it was his first, or maybe it might have been even his first two teams at Arkansas that came to the College World Series and fizzled out. But he has made some noise and won some games and kept the Hawks in town for a while, and now he's been here many more times with Arkansas, his alma mater, than he had with Nebraska. So I think the days of looking at Dave Van Horn as the Nebraska coach who then went on to do some things at Arkansas, that's been redefined. This guy, Arkansas, is his legacy, and he made a stop in between his playing days and the crowning achievement of his career at Nebraska. I mean, there are great moments for Nebraska, but it's definitely not the lead sentence in his College Baseball Hall of Fame bio someday. He's a guy that, I would say I'm a little bit surprised that he hasn't gotten over the top and won a championship or made it to the College World Series finals yet. I think that day will come for him. Maybe it'll be this year. He's got a team that can hit as well or better than any of the eight teams in the field, the other seven. So, I wouldn't say they're under the radar, because this isn't really a field that's dominated by one team or two teams. I mean, you've got two of the top three original seeds here, but I think just looking at this field, it's balanced enough that you could see any of these teams in the finals a week from Monday. So, including Arkansas, the way that the Hogs have played this postseason. So to me, that it's only a matter of time for Dave Van Horn before he does win a national championship. And then, even now, he's definitely regarded as one of the great coaches in the game.
Mitch Sherman's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter is where you find him, and he'll be all over CWS coverage with ESPN.com. Mitch, Oregon State, one of my favorites, Coach Casey, always enjoy spending a few minutes with him during the season or this time of year. And what do you make of his Oregon State team? I know they're loaded, they're great. You mentioned the three first-round picks they've had this year. Is this loaded of an Oregon State team as you've seen? I mean, are they, if you were to pick a favorite, are they it?
The Oregon State and Florida, they're the high seeds, and I think, throw away those numbers in front of their names. They're still the favorite because of the two favorites on each side of the bracket because of what they bring on the mound. And, that sounds a little strange with Oregon State because they've got the three first-round picks in the lineup. And Adley Rutschman, Oregon State's catcher, is a sophomore. He'll be a first-round pick next year. I mean, he may be the number one overall pick next year. So it's really four first-round picks in the lineup, and they've got a leadoff guy in Stephen Kwan at center field, who's a fifth-round pick and is as valuable of a college baseball player and as fun to watch of a college baseball player as you're going to find. So that's five out of nine in their lineup who are just outstanding college baseball players, and there are some others too. So they are very deep. It is there. You don't get a rest in facing that Beaver lineup. On the mound, though, they bring a 1-2 that, as long as Bryce Femmel, their number two starter, is in his late season form, you put him with Luke Heimlich, and their 1-2 is as good as any in the country. And that is overemphasized, that is magnified in Omaha because of the time between games if you continue to win. You can get through your side of the bracket largely with two pitchers. So that's why I like Oregon State on one side of the bracket, the Saturday side of the bracket, and I like Florida on its side of the bracket for a lot of the same reasons. A ton of star power in the lineup, led by Jonathan India, another first-round pick, the number five pick in the draft, and then the two future Kansas City Royals leading the pitching staff, Brady Singer and Jackson Kowar. So also high draft pick, Singer as a first-rounder. So if you're a Royals fan, come out on Sunday and Tuesday to see a couple of guys who may make another stop not too far down the road at Warner Park on their way to Kansas City. And I think they stand a good chance to help Florida also make the finals.
Mitch Sherman's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Mitch, want to switch gears and touch on Nebraska here for a few minutes. Nebraska, the Husker Nation Tour, day two. And the first segment, I spent time talking about Travis Fisher. He had a meeting last night with his secondary. It was pretty on point and poignant about going down the list. Critiques, publicly critiquing Lamar Jackson, Antonio Reed, Markell Dismuke, the three corners he has and what he wants to see from him. He wants to see heart. I'm paraphrasing, but does that kind of shock you, or is it something that you think needs to be said and out there in the public?
Well, I don't think it all needs to be said in public. I don't think he needs to make his criticisms known other than maybe in some general terms in the public. I don't think the public, it's best necessarily for the public to hear exactly what he's critiquing these guys on. And I'm not familiar if he did exactly that. I think it's fine to say, hey, and what I heard was that you got guys who are coming to take your jobs. So if you're in that secondary, and you know you've been a part of it in the past, and you think because you started or you had a lot of playing time and you're older that you're going to have a spot locked down heading into August, you know, you better think again, because we've got guys coming in this year, and we're going to have guys coming in every year who are gunning for your jobs. And I mean, that goes, that's I think just somewhat normal talk. I mean, we don't hear it necessarily in public, but that's the kind of stuff that coaches say. And I think that doing what they're doing right now, if they're critiquing the players in front of each other, in front of their peers, you know, they want the players to grow close together. And I think that in some ways, a method of doing that is to have them grow together and, you know, almost against the coaches. Now that's, those fences will be mended, and the coaches are going to be somebody that they can trust for sure. But there's a lot of methods and a lot of techniques that you do to build up your team. Now, you tear them down, you build them up, and they're stronger than they were to begin with. So I don't think they want Lamar Jackson or Antonio Reed or Markell Dismuke to go out and feel hurt by this. They want them to feel challenged. They want those guys to, you know, to bond together. They want the teammate aspect of it to rise to the top, and for these players to help each other and say, no, I mean, the freshmen aren't going to come in and take our jobs. The junior college guys aren't going to come in and take our jobs. They're our jobs. We're going to have pride in this program and in the way that we play. And I think what you've heard this week with the talk from the coaches is just a way that they are trying to bring that out of the players.
Mitch Sherman's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Mitch, is there a position group that you're most concerned with for Nebraska in this upcoming season? Is there one that kind of tops to the top of your mind?
You know, I always say offensive line. Mm-hmm. I just, it's just my standard answer. And as you were asking the question, I was kind of sifting through the different position groups. And I mean, linebacker is so huge in this defense. And I think we'll find that out over the years if it's kind of patterned in a somewhat similar way to what you have at Wisconsin. Wisconsin is great on defense when it produces All-America caliber and All-Big Ten linebackers. And, you know, we'll see if Nebraska has the guys to be able to do that. I think they may be a little bit away. I think they made some strides with, even in this first recruiting class, with what they recruited out of the junior college level. But you can't expect, I don't expect it to turn overnight with the quality of play that you have at linebacker in a new regime. Much like I expect from the team, I think the play at linebacker will be a lot better in year two, under Eric Shenander and Scott Frost's system. But, you know, I'll go back to offensive line because I think it just holds the key for almost everything on the offensive side. Yeah, you need a quarterback, but you've got to protect your quarterback. If he can't stay upright, if he can't get the ability to operate and do his job, then, you know, it doesn't matter. Adrian Martinez can be the best recruit in that class from 2017-18, and if he doesn't have guys blocking for him, then, you know, forget it. He's not going to get it done as a freshman, and neither is Tristan Jebbia. So to me, when you start looking at position groups that have to perform year in and year out, I almost always begin the conversation at offensive line.
That's a good conversation starter. Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and Magazine. Be sure to follow him and read him with his CWS coverage the next couple of weeks. Mitch, we'll run you down next week. Thanks for a few minutes, bud.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Take care. Mitch Sherman with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Quick timeout. A title team. Which one's most hated? We'll run down a list for you. Hale Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hale Varsity Radio.
20 minutes away, it's Rick Pizzo time, Big Ten Buffet. Big thanks to Mitch Sherman of ESPN, former Husker assistant, strength and conditioning coach, and now part of, well, now, it's been part of Team Crawford. Bud Crawford did his thing Saturday night. Caught a little bit of it on the phone while at the Rockies game. And Jamie Belt going to be with us in a little less than an hour. Can tap the line. Shelling Bridge Cork and Tap House lets you do that. 466-377-6800-825-5865 at Schmidt underscore radio. On Twitter at Two Birds One Stone for Colton. Can send an email, chris@alevarsity.com. Okay. Most hated championship team, go. We'll get into it. We'll run down the list here in a second. AgriGold wants to tell you, though, about the soybean sign in your neighbor's field this year. It's AgriGold. Customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct to their farm the AgriGold way, with high expectations for every seed that goes into the ground. And the approach to soybeans, no different. High-performance soybeans from a brand you already know and trust. For more info, visit AgriGold.com. Colton, you've been around 20-plus years. You've seen some title teams. Is there one that sticks out above all in college football that you, well, you dry heave over?
Well, I was going to go farther back than my time. I was going to say any time Miami won in the 80s.
Okay, that's
fair. I think a lot of people don't like Miami.
I think you're right. They were number one on the 24/7 sports list of the 10 most hated college football teams of all time. The 86 Hurricanes with Vinny Interceptiverde. They were very, very much disliked. Here's the list. In at number 10, 1997, Michigan.
Okay.
And that's Nebraska fans probably top three, maybe number one, most hated college football team of all time that won a title or shared a title. You ask some Nebraska fans, why are you talking about the fact that they are recognized for a title? They didn't deserve one. Bama 2012 comes in at number nine. I screwed this up. It's not just championship teams, but it can be teams. The year. Oklahoma 2017. You had Baker and the whole Michael Jackson ode down in Lawrence. You had him planting the flag in Norman. He's just kind of a cocky dude that lost to Iowa State and couldn't make a play against Georgia when they needed him to, when they stopped running the ball, whatever. I don't dislike that Oklahoma team last year. I thought they were fun to watch. This team, you mentioned how you hate Miami, and a lot of Nebraska fans dislike Miami. Well, this team gets the most crap for a phantom victory over Miami. I think this team's top three all time. If you go national, it's the 2002 Ohio State Buckeyes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised that's not on your short list, knowing how much you kind of like some Canes players.
Yeah, how much I've watched those old Miami games. I'm not saying I hate Miami like football by any means. It was fun to watch, but they came back to bite everybody so many times. But yeah, that 0-2 Buckeye squad was. That I think that still haunts
the flag in the end zone.
Yeah, no, I kind of spaced that one, but yeah, that's got to be up there.
I mean, they were going for back to back. So you're in at number seven with the 0-2 Ohio State team. The 93 Notre Dame team comes in at six. The Gators of 1996 in at five. Cam and the Auburn Tigers of 2010 in at four. Mm-hmm. Florida State 2014. That was Jameis's last year, where they played with fire. They were down 21 points to about everybody. About half the year, they were coming back from double digits and then got slaughtered by Oregon in the college football semifinal. 2005 USC comes in at number two, and the 1986 Miami Hurricanes come in at number one. If you remember watching the U, that's the Miami team that was unbeaten, was crushing everybody. Ran the score up against Notre Dame. Many of you secretly loved that. Don't lie to me. But they showed up off the plane in army fatigues. They almost started the fight in a riot at one of the pre-bowl get-togethers where they walked out. Jimmy Johnson was rolling his eyes the whole time and really didn't discipline dudes. And then they go get beat by Sandusky's defense in 86, 14-10. Okay, here's some teams that did not make the list that you could really talk yourself into making the list. 2009 Texas. Mm-hmm. As a Nebraska fan, you're oh so close to getting them in the Big 12 championship game. They got murdered by Alabama. They weren't that tough. They weren't that good. They weren't that physical. The 09 Texas team with Colt McCoy, they were just good enough to get through the Big 12. But when push came to shove, they were annihilated by Bama. 2015 Iowa. They were undefeated. They were 12-0. They played really good, really well against Sparty. Sparty had an 8-minute death march drive. Mm-hmm. And the old Cowherd fake ID take on Iowa. They didn't play anyone all year. Won some close games against some bad opponents. Didn't have Penn State. Didn't have Ohio State on the schedule that year. Mm-hmm. Got by Wisconsin. Barely won at Nebraska in 2015. I can because they got beat in heartbreak fashion in the Big Ten title game, and then they go get annihilated by Christian McCaffrey and Stanford.
Yep.
2001 Nebraska. I love that team. I remember watching that team. I saw the wheels come off of that team. That said, as they got in, folks nationally were just outraged that Nebraska was playing Miami for the national championship. Again, as a native Nebraskan, they are not on the list. If you're talking some national dude, the 20 or the 2001 Husker team will come up. The 86 Oklahoma team could be on this list. The legendary story of halftime, or excuse me, pregame kickoff, Mark Mumford and the Boz, and Boz refuses to shake hands at midfield against Nebraska. Keith Jackson does the rest, breaks your heart in the all-red game. And then Boz, I think, gets suspended. And then goes Mother Russia, NCAA, Communist Society. 86 Oklahoma belongs on that list. Let's go to the phones. Nate, welcome in. Welcome to Hail Varsity. Go ahead.
Hey, Chris, old buddy. How are you?
Good, man.
Nate hates any Colorado team from about 87 to 92. I mean, passionately. That stupid Darian Hagan, Eric Bieniemy, insert random criminal in this name sentence right here. I hate Colorado passionately. You know, I always had a good time when I went to Norman, and I was treated respectfully by Oklahoma fans the way we kind of treat, you know, people when they come up here. But, I mean, when I went to Boulder, I had my car window broke out, my gas tank peed in, my whip antenna pulled off. I hate – if we could just give the entire city of Boulder to North Korea to make peace, I'd be totally fine with that. Beyond them, I mean, 87 Miami was really crappy. I didn't really like those guys. Mm-hmm. I really hate that Clemson team that beat us in, like, 83 because they didn't deserve it. They really weren't a national champion. They kind of had that dropped in their lap. Kudos to them for beating us, but they were nowhere near the best team.
They had
year.
The frigid nose guard as a freshman that was good. Good stuff, Nate.
True.
I'll comment
True.
On the Colorado teams.
Yeah, please.
Because they're number one on my list. The 1990 Buffs, arguably the most hated. We'll continue it on. Hail Varsity continues.
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Jamie Belt, head trader for Bud Crawford. In 35 minutes, we'll run down Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet. 24-7 Sports' most hated college football teams of all time. 86 Miami in at number one. Michigan 97 in at 10. And we're talking about some teams that you really didn't like, you can say hate, that got left out. You have Cam's Auburn team, you have Florida 96, you have Notre Dame 93. You know why people hated the 93 Notre Dame team? They beat Charlie Ward, and then they just soiled themselves the following week against Boston College. Remember watching that. Remember watching that. Came home from the coldest game in the history of America with Iowa State. Every time they came to Memorial Stadium, it was cold. Nebraska trounced Iowa State, went over to a cousin's house, watched Charlie Ward. There's no way Florida State covered that game, but they were down 14, and they got a tipped pass in the end zone. And it looked a lot better than it was. The following week, on the Notre Dame Broadcast Network, Notre Dame had the old NBC deal going way, way, way before anybody else. Still have it. They got worked by Glenn Foley. Not Axel, but Glenn. I think. Pete Mitchell at tight end. He went for about 7,000 yards that game. But Holtz went nuts after they won the Sugar Bowl, claiming they should be a champion because they beat Florida State, and Florida State only beat Nebraska by 2. Okay, so Nate called in. He picked a wide range of Colorado teams from 87 through 93. I think number one on my list for like most hated college football team of all time was the 1990 Buffs. They were awesome. They were great, but I couldn't stand them.
Was that the fifth down?
That was the fifth down. That was the fifth down Colorado team against Missouri. Mm-hmm. They lost that one, or they should have lost that one. That would have been their second loss. Now, to their credit, they had a monster schedule where they tied Tennessee to start the year, and then they lost to Howard Griffith and the Illini. Good Illinois team at that time that year. So they went 10-1-1 and were co-champs. Smoked Nebraska in 1990 in the fourth quarter. Partied like I've never seen anyone party at Memorial Stadium. And that game was just brutal cold. Rain and dark. But they were a tough team to like handle. And then on top of the fifth down, on top of the tie, on top of the one loss, they play Notre Dame and rematch Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl. And Rocket Ishmael. And Rocket takes one back to the house that would have given Notre Dame the win. And they get nailed for a clip.
Yep.
And it dirtied. I mean, that was the mother of all sell your soul for a championship season. I mean, there's 15 different things. Nebraska executes a fake punt at midfield. They go get some points in a rain-soaked, frigid game. Don't worry about it. Nebraska's playing for a title, likely. Nope. Colorado gets in. Fifth down. Tie. Loss. Clip. Book it. There's my vote. Rick Pizzo's on the way. Big Ten Buffet time next. Jamie Beld coming on. Talk about Bud Crawford. The work he's been doing. Hour two on the way.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Big Ten Buffet time. Rick Pizzo of the Big Ten Network at BTN. Rick Pizzo with us. Mr. Rick, how are you, sir?
My man, life is good. Recently had a chance to get out of the country. Spent some time in Spain last week. That makes for a happy guy.
Tell me about Spain, quickly. If Spain were a Big Ten football team, what team would they be?
Oh, man, that is a great question. If Spain were a Big Ten, well, I'll give you two different ones, okay, because I was in Barcelona and I was in Madrid. So Madrid is really your hopping, bopping, hustling kind of real major city area. So you have to pick one of the city schools. You know, do you want to go up to Minneapolis, kind of the biggest city, or does Northwestern count because it's in Chicago? Madrid actually reminded me a lot of Chicago, so I guess I'll go Northwestern there. Now, Barcelona is completely different. It's only 3 hours away by train, but it is a coastal town. The seafood is tremendous. The weather is great. The people love to walk, a very fit city. So I don't know. I guess I would go maybe College Park because you're the closest to being on the water, closest to the ocean kind of area. I mean, there's not a lot of great comparisons. They don't care. I'm not even going to say much. They don't even know what American football is in Barcelona. So to make the comparisons a little difficult.
Bathlon is out. It's preseason mag time. We'll get you a copy of the Hail Varsity yearbook. It's incredible work by the crew this year. I know you'll love it. Scott Frost comes in when they're ranking Big Ten coaches in at 7. Too high, too low, just right.
It's a matter of wait and see, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think based on what he's done in the past, you would automatically say, well, that's too low. I mean, UCF from 0 and everything to everything and 0. How can he be number 7? And then you have to take a step back. And you have to look at the existing coaches inside the Big Ten. And you have to look at national championships, conference championships, and New Year's Six bowl victories. And what's happened the last couple of years with teams flirting with perfection. I think it's fair for now. Though I will say, Chris, that I think it is 7 with a bullet. Upward trajectory-wise.
No, I think the trend is going to increase. Anthon has Urban in at number 1, D'Antonio at 2, and then Franklin at 3, Harbaugh comes in at 4, and then you have Pat Fitzgerald at 5, Paul Chryst at 6. Knee-jerk to that top 6 I just gave you.
How is Paul Chryst number 6? I mean, that's my knee-jerk. I know that he is not the most personality-plus, media-friendly, stir-up-the-pot kind of guy. He's the exact opposite. But look at what Wisconsin has done. It doesn't even matter what they lose each year. It doesn't even matter who's playing quarterback. It matters that everybody buys into the system. Paul has done a phenomenal job since taking over as the head guy. He was phenomenal when he was the OC. He is the perfect fit there. I take nothing away from the guys in front of him, but there are a couple of guys in front of him who have not accomplished what he has accomplished in the much shorter time that he's been the head coach at his current institution.
Let's talk Nebraska for a second, Rick. Position group, pick a side of the ball, offense or defense, that you're concerned most with for Nebraska in 2018.
Well, I just wonder if you can pressure the passer enough from the defensive line to give your back 7 time. Because, as you know, when you are a defensive coordinator like Eric Shenander, and he dealt with this, obviously, having been with Scott at UCF, when you have a high-octane offense that can score quickly, but also throws the ball so often and takes so many risks that you have 3 and outs as well, there's a lot of quick change defensively. The guys who are in the back 7 are typically fit enough that they can deal with that for the majority of the game if they get help from the front 4, and that means pressuring the passer and not allowing the opposing offense to take advantage of the back 7. So for me, there's your biggest concern. With what Nebraska has lost in the defensive line the last couple of years, can Shenander put together a deep enough group, not just talented enough, because you have to rotate guys in. Why Ohio State was so good defensively last year, even though they played an up-tempo offense, was because they had 7 top-tier defensive linemen that they could rotate in. Will Nebraska be able to have that kind of depth on the defensive line? It's not just that I'm concerned about the talent level there. It is the effect that that group will have on the 7 guys behind them defensively.
You're right on, man. It is about depth, and what's the drop-off with 1s to 2s? Or do you have a front 7? Do you have a front 14? Pretty much, do you have minimal drop-off between the rotation that can get to the quarterback? The cornerbacks are an area of concern just because they're so thin there, and you've got guys that really struggled last year in part because of what you mentioned, that pass rush. But you see it in football. Your offense is going to mirror your defense and vice versa. So you're going to need depth, you're going to need talent, and you're going to need the defense to be able to go 80 to 90 plays because that's what the offense wants to do.
And, Chris, if you look at the teams that have been the best in the Big Ten in recent years, that is a connected thread. Our defensive lines. Everybody looked at how good Ohio State's defensive line was. Yes. Michigan's defensive line. Yes. Wisconsin's defensive line. Nobody talked about Penn State's defensive line over the last couple of years. They led the nation in sacks. What about Northwestern's defensive line last year? Everybody forgets about how good they were up front defensively. But you ask the coaches, and they will right away tell you how important that was. There's no way Northwestern wins 10 games without that defensive line. There's no way that Penn State sniffs being part of the college football playoff without being among the nation's leaders in sacks. So that, to me, as much as anything, as much as standout dual threat quarterbacks, as much as a running back that can tote it 25 times a game, as much as a solid offensive line, a defensive line with depth, first tier, top talent depth, as important to me as any position group on any team in the country as far as overall success is concerned.
A few minutes here, Rick Pizzo joining us, Hail Varsity Radio, Big Ten Buffet with Rick Pizzo of the Big Ten Network at BTN. Rick Pizzo is where you find and follow him on Twitter. Give me a look-see inside to Northwestern's culture and what Coach Fitzgerald's done there. They have a chance to stack another 10-win season. I know Thorson's health is the question. We'll get into the transfer here in a minute, but what is Northwestern football all about? Can you paint the picture for me?
Well, I think it's changed dramatically over the course of the past 2 to 3 years, because they had won 10 games in the past under Pat Fitzgerald, but they were never really able to continually build success, to go 10 wins, 8 wins, 10 wins, 3 years in a row. And I understand that there are a lot of reasons why. Yes, the academic requirements and how hard it is to do well there as a student athlete plays a part into depth. But when you start to have success, which they're doing, when you have an athletic director who gets it and understands the importance of your football program, your main revenue-driving sport, being successful, that makes a huge difference. And with Jim Phillips, Northwestern has that. So what do they have now? They have a $300 million lakefront facility that not just rivals, but is probably better than any in the country. And you brought up the transfer. They don't get a former number one quarterback recruit, a five-star guy from Clemson. You don't get Hunter unless you have that facility, unless you have 10 wins. Now, you hope that Clayton Thorson comes back healthy, that you have an 8, 9, 10 win season again, and then next year you have a quarterback who comes in directly and is ready to go as one of the immediate best quarterbacks in the league. That's why I think from last year to perhaps the 2019 season, that will be as big a change, as big a shift in not just how Northwestern identifies itself as a football program, but how the nation identifies Northwestern as a football program if all these dominoes fall into place like I think they will, and they continue to build success and have a marquee recruit. Even though it's a transfer, it's still a recruit. Like Johnson coming in and making a difference like that changes everything from the outside and inside for Northwestern.
It's a pretty big-time statement that a guy like that heads to Northwestern, and Northwestern's been good. They've been consistent. Quite honestly, they've been in a lot of big games, and they've fared well. They've not always won all of them, but I don't think they're seen as kind of a scrappy, upstart, upset-minded team. I think there's real respect for them because when for instance, Wisconsin comes to Northwestern, they don't play well at Northwestern. Wisconsin loses very few league games, but when they do in the West Division, it's likely to a road trip to Wisconsin to Northwestern. They've played the Ohio States pretty well. They've been in it with Penn State. They've beaten Michigan State, so they've got the wins. Now they've got the facility. From a home field standpoint, though, is that the next thing to fix/conquer? Because it does feel like this is from the old Big 12 days. Whenever you go play Northwestern as a visiting opponent, half the stadium's full of your guys, and it's not a tough environment to be in.
Yeah, well, success not only breeds success, Chris, it breeds interest. And so if Northwestern starts to continuously win, consistently win 9-10 games a year, then you are going to have more consistent interest. It has definitely been up and down based on how Northwestern is doing and based on the opponent that is coming to Ryan Field that week. There also need to be improvements made to Ryan Field, and I think that is next. That is coming. They've done Welsh Ryan Arena. They do the Lakefront Athletic Facility. The wonderful thing about Northwestern when it comes to fundraising is not only is Jim Phillips phenomenal at that, Pat Fitzgerald is very good in that area as well, and Lord knows they have plenty of alums who have plenty of money. So it's not the money being an issue, it's the allocation of those funds. And I think once those who actually write the checks see what can happen with this new facility, when it comes to recruiting and when it comes to driving people into the stands, Ryan Field could potentially be a bigger home field advantage than it's ever been in the past, because you're right. When Nebraska plays in years past, when Iowa plays, when Michigan plays at Northwestern, it's 50-50 at best for the home team. And if you're going to spend $300 million on a facility, and if you're going to get five-star recruits, you know that that can't be the case forever.
Rick, a thought here on Ohio State, speaking of recruiting and the stars associated with the players that come in. How's Urban Meyer conquer entitlement? How does he deprogram?
Well, it's really easy, because you can't come in and say, well, I'm a five-star guy, I own the room, because every room you sit in has 15 other five-star guys in there. And that is what Urban has earned. He is in that rarefied air. Mike Krzyzewski's there in college basketball. There are other guys that are there. Bill Self is probably there in college basketball. There are other guys that are there in college football, certainly Nick Saban. We don't even really have to recruit. There are very few guys who you really have to go after and convince to go to your school other than go elsewhere. And when that's the case, these players arrive in Columbus and in Tuscaloosa and basketball-wise in Durham and in Lawrence, and they're not allowed to feel entitled because they're surrounded by guys just like them. The harder piece is for coaches who are just now recruiting five-star guys, who don't have a lot of five-star guys. That's why Wisconsin, while they would love to get five-star guys, they're fine with getting three- and four-star guys, because that's what's already in their room, and they bond together over it. That happens with five-star guys at very few places, but it happens at Ohio State, and so I actually think that makes Urban's job a little easier.
Rick, a thought on Coach Beilein. How close was he heading to the Pistons, in your opinion?
I don't know that he was all that close. I think you have to take a look. I think you have to do the dance. It's nice that somebody at that level is interested. John, 65, he's coached in a million different places. He has Michigan playing basketball like they've never played on a consistent basis. Two trips to the national title game in 6 years. Consistently now contending inside the Big Ten. Ann Arbor is a great place to live. He is creating NBA players. Mo Wagner, Nick Stauskas, Caris LeVert, Trey Burke. I mean, look at the guys who have come in and gone on to great futures. He will continue to recruit. I think this will be his last job.
Okay. Dennis Rodman, what do you know about the Worm?
Oh, boy. I was watching a lot of the broadcast last night for the Historic Summit, and I think it's fascinating that we get these political commentators tell us exactly what's going to happen and whether we should believe Kim Jong-un, that they're actually going to take away their nuclear weapons, and what this summit means and what it means for us politically. And then, boom, you go to a clip of Dennis Rodman, who is complaining that Obama didn't listen because Rodman told him exactly what was going to happen and we could have been doing this 6 to 8 years ago. And all I can think is, the guy that's pouting and complaining, and he's taking off his shoes, and he refuses to sit on the chairs, and his back hurts, and he's on the towel. Listen, if Dennis Rodman is our main diplomat, if he's the guy that's solving problems in any foreign country, we have much, much bigger issues than I'm aware of.
Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Rick, awesome stuff. We'll get caught up again. Thanks for a few today.
Always good to catch up, Chris. Have a great day, my man.
Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet, his thoughts on the Worm. That's an interesting day. Sauter Heyman's, where you can go get those pure-grown diamonds with Rick and the gang. 100% real diamonds grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mine diamonds. Birthday anniversary or just gift time, go see Rick, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, Sauter Heyman. 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln Rod West in Grand Island. Log on today, SauterHeyman.com. Jamie Belt, we'll talk Bud Crawford next.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back into it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Welcome in longtime strength and conditioning coach at Nebraska, and he's been working with Bud Crawford, the champ, for such a long time. Jamie Belt with us here on the program. Jamie, congrats on the weekend, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I appreciate it. So I'm just hanging out, doing some fishing right now, and I'm just kind of enjoying life today.
I am bothering you during fishing. Leave it to me. So are they biting? Forgive me.
No, yeah, everything, it's good. I'm at a good little pond here, a little private lake outside of Ashland. So, yeah, they're always biting out here.
That's a good answer, man. We'll catch a giant one. Take me through the training leading up to Saturday night with Bud and the process that kind of took place to get ready for Horn.
You know, it was actually a pretty long process. You know, we trained for 12. Sorry, I just caught a fish. I'm gonna.
Put the phone down. I'll fill.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Start reeling.
But no, we trained for like 12 weeks. And, you know, that's a pretty grueling training camp considering, you know, most of the fights that I was with him in the past, we trained for anywhere from, you know, 6, 7, 8 weeks. And with him getting that handed injury, you know, it allowed us to train a little bit longer. You know, I think it was actually a good thing, you know, because it was a, you know, we trained for a little while. We got to take a little break, and then we got right back into it. And it was just, you know, it was a good thing.
Jamie Belt's with us, Hale Varsity Radio, trainer for Bud Crawford. And strength and conditioning so key in sports. You know it as you've been at it at the professional level for such a long time, and you're no stranger to the ring. Take me back to how you connected with Bud and how that trust buildup started to happen.
You know, it started about 11, 12 years ago, I would say. You know, right when I got out of college, I was actually working for Zach Duval in Omaha. And, you know, right out of college, I had the opportunity when, you know, to work with Zach at his private facility in Omaha, and was working with a lot of fighters at the time, a lot of, you know, guys that were in the UFC. I was working with like Jake Allenberger and Jason Brills, Ryan Jensen, you know, these guys that were, you know, they had long careers in the UFC, and I was working with a guy too named Grover Wiley. And Grover was a big time boxer in Omaha. You know, Grover beat, I think it was Julio Cesar Chavez about 15 years ago, and I built a relationship with Grover and was working with Grover. He was getting ready to have an MMA fight, and he just told me one day, he's like, "Hey, I got this kid that I'm working with, and his name's Terrence Crawford. Had just won the Golden Gloves, and he said, I want him to come in. I want you to work with him. He's going to be world champion someday." And the very next day, Bud walks through those doors, and you know, we hit it off right there, and you know, we've been in contact, and we've had a great relationship since.
Tell me about motivating. That's part of your job, not only to get dudes in shape and be warriors physically, but from a motivation standpoint, you got to be psychologist a bit too, don't you?
Oh, big time. You know, with one thing that, you know, the way I work with Bud, the way I've trained Bud always in the past is I've always done the same thing he's doing, you know, so. You know, I always try to get in the best shape as I can in before we go to camp. So when we go to camp, I can push Terrence a little bit when we're running, when we're lifting, when we're just training in general. So I think he sees that, you know, he's seen that through me to where, you know, if I'm going through it with him at the same time and I'm not quitting and I'm not complaining and I'm just pushing through everything as hard as I can, he's going to do it too.
So the investment man rubs off big time, it sounds like.
He rubs off on all of us, man. He's honestly, Bud's a very self-motivated guy. He does not need me to motivate him because he's got, you know, so many people that depend on him.
Jamie Belt's with us, Hale Varsity Radio, trainer of Bud Crawford. You look at what Bud's done, lightweight title, junior welterweight, and then the outright welterweight on Saturday. What's next for Crawford, and what direction do you believe he wants to go?
You know, he wants any big fight and every big fight he can get at 147 right now. You know, he's you know, obviously he's made a pretty big name for himself already in the sport of boxing, and he just wants to solidify, he wants to keep solidifying his name solidifying his name and history, and he wants the best fights out there that his promoters and his managers can make him. And you know, he's going to keep on winning. That's what he wants to do.
What concerns were there going into Saturday, and how soon were they answered?
You know, we all kind of knew how Jeff Horn fought. You know, watching a couple of his fights, you know, before Saturday, we knew he was going to come out hard. He was going to come in head first, and you know, the only thing that we were really worried about was headbutts. You know, or you know, him knocking heads with him, because Jeff comes in so hard and so fast, and he leads with his head, and you know, he's kind of like a, you know, he's kind of like a 147-pound fullback the way he boxes. He's just a brawler, so we had really good sparring partners out there, big sparring partner that imitated that well, you know, there wasn't nothing that Jeff did that concerned us at all, you know, we just, you know, stuck to our training and stuck to our, you know, what we did all camp, and it all worked out fine.
Follow the plan. Jamie Belt is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. From a mental standpoint, I really want to know, kind of in depth, you're so close to the situation. Physically, you've got. Mentally, you got to have that will to keep going, too.
Yeah, it's just, like I told you, you know, he's very self-motivated, and, you know, with a guy like him, you got to make the tasks at hand kind of hard, because the harder it is, the more he thrives. And, you know, the harder situation you put in front of him, the more he wants to get over that situation. So that's what we kind of did. You know, our training was hard. You know, that was, he said that was probably the toughest training camp he's went through. And it was, you know, he's probably the best shape and, you know, the most physical he's ever felt. And it was just a culmination of a lot of things. Just all the training, you know, all the boxing, all the sparring that led up to it, you know, the training camp and everything, and just the training aspect for that fight was that, you know, that was the hard part. The easy part's, you know, getting in that ring. That's the easy part.
Can you outline, I don't know if they're family secrets, but what entails getting him ready on a week-to-week basis? I mean, how do you build up? How do you go at it? Tell me the training.
I mean, we just, you know, the training is pretty grueling, man. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it as far as like, you know, the nutrition component, the resting component, and the training component, and, you know, just a lot of the you know, the conditioning that we do. You know, it's hard conditioning. You know, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, they look at boxers, you know, they look at those type of athletes, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, boxers need to go out and they need to run for long distances, and, you know, they need to run at least 3 miles a day, and just because that's what they saw Rocky doing, and that's not how we train, man. You know, I trained him like an athlete. I trained him like I would train a defensive back. You know, we did a lot of speed and agility drills. We did a lot of high intensity, you know, what people call cardio training, you know, a lot of high intensity interval stuff. And, you know, we just kind of based all the workouts off of what the boxing workout was for the day.
Jamie Belt, couple more minutes with us. Hail Varsity Radio, trainer for Bud Crawford, longtime strength and conditioning coach at Nebraska, and he's interrupting his fishing time to spend a few minutes with us here on the program. Let's switch to football for a second, Jamie, if that's cool. You know Zach real well, and I guess your excitement level for Nebraska with Coach Duvall down there and kind of your outlook moving forward.
And I think Zach Duvall there now, I mean, that's where he belongs, man. Like he was born to do what he's doing at Nebraska right now. And he's, you know, I wouldn't call it a blast from the past, but he's a blast from the past that's gonna, you know, make the future. And, you know, having him down there and the ties that he has to the university and just him being the type of person he is going to be tremendous, you know, for that team.
Jamie, keep throwing it in the water, my friend, and good luck with more bites. And hey, you're the best. Continued success with Team Crawford and what you're doing, man. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate it.
Jamie Belt, good to get caught up with him, and just tremendous on Saturday night. Bud Crawford doing his thing and capturing a third different championship. And great insight there from Jamie, who's worked with Bud for such a long, long time. Jamie, a great dude and incredible at what he does. I want to remind you about texting and driving. Don't do it. Stupider things out there to do, but that list is short. Texting and driving, very dangerous behavior for any driver. So no matter what you think you can get away with or what you can do, sending or receiving a text while driving takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. It's like driving blind at 55 miles per hour for more than the length of a football field, and it increases your crash risk by 23 times. So texting and driving in Nebraska, also illegal, can get fined between $100 and $300. No text message more important than your life, the life of your passengers and others on the roadway. A message from the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office. We'll jump in here to a little NBA discussion. More thoughts on Nebraska as Husker Nation Tour Day 2 continues. Hail Varsity all over it. As Derek Peterson and Greg Smith and I think Jacob Padilla, all three, are in Gretna. That's getting underway. Bill Moose, some comments he has made earlier about the rematch, the showdown, the get-together with Oklahoma, and a game of the century comment that's pretty good. Must-see stuff on HailVarsity.com with today's info and sit-down. Around the state, day two, Coach Chenander was incredible. Coach Fisher, great stuff from him on what he needs and wants from his defensive backs. Did not pull punches at all with the three guys returning at that corner spot. We'll get into a little more Nebraska football and Decision 3.0. Hail Varsity continues.
Chime in, 402-466-ESPN, or email the show, Chris at HailVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Can tap the line. Chilling Bridge Court can tap house. Let's do that. 466-377-6800-825-5865. We've covered the black shirt discussion, the defensive backs on notice. And now Bill Moose. Earlier today, Robin Washer tweeting this out. AD Bill Moose asked if Nebraska planned to do anything special for the 50th anniversary of the Game of the Century. That'll be in 2021. Home and home with OU 2021-2022, I think. I'm getting my dates mixed up, but I know the Game of the Century was 71, so you get the point. They have Oklahoma on the schedule in 2021. So is Nebraska going to do anything special for the Game of the Century when Oklahoma comes to Lincoln? And that'll be a year after the anniversary is actually the game down in Norman. But Bill Moose responded, the most special thing we're going to do is beat them. I love it. So you've got black shirts that aren't going to be handed out like M&Ms.
Mm-hmm.
You may not get one, and it can be ripped away. You have heart as a requirement to play defensive back,
mm-hmm.
or the young guys are going to take your job. Man. Also comments on Tyron Ferguson, paraphrasing. But he's not a leader, but he might be a fire starter. That's not a pyro take. It means he can talk it. But do you want guys following him? Antonio Reed, a guy they got to stay on top of. He could be great. Lamar drifting back and forth between last year and the new Lamar for this season. But I didn't get to this. We ran out of time. I mean, this is super, super cutting, straightforward, no BS, and that's what this is. Mm-hmm. Good. Because I think with some of the other guys you had last year, I think there was just a lot of fluff and smoke to get dudes here, and then there was no disciplinarian, and there sure as hell was no oversight from time to time, a lot of the time. Kind of your choice, your call, go do weights. Well, the guy that is really kind of put on blast here, and this is not anything that Coach Fisher has not told his corners to their face. And I look at a guy like Eric Lee. Eric Lee's a guy who's taken a step back, and there was a point there where he wondered if he loved football. I mean, for your position coach to put that there in front of you and have yourself a conversation like that, ask yourself that question. It challenges you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he's doing it to be mean. It's just what's going to happen. You either win your job, keep your job, be better, or the young guys are going to come in and play. And I want guys with heart versus talent.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you got to keep trying to tap that talent versus it already kind of rolling over to being talented consistently, if you get guys who play hard, they're going to go make a play for you.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, that's a really mature conversation to have with an 18 to 22-year-old, basically not questioning their passion, but making sure that it's all there.
Bro, do you want to play or not?
Yeah, you're not going to, you don't want to put, you know, 11 guys out there that are kind of questioning whether they want to be on the field. You want 11 guys
out
there.
You're letting down 10 others if
And if
it,
even if
there.
It's just one, right? And, you know, you want 11 guys out there that, yeah, they might make mistakes. And I know they've come out and said this. We're okay with mistakes as long as you play hard, you get back up, and you go back after it. It's the guys that are going to, you know, hang their head after one bad play or make a mistake or miss a tackle that they don't want to have to sit there and babysit guys either. And so I think that's, like you said, he's not trying to be mean to him. He's just honestly saying, if you don't want to play, we'll find someone that wants to.
The other part of this, too, is you had no recourse of a guy getting yanked or benched. I mean, you had jobs being given, not earned.
Right.
In some instances. The ethos of the defense from Chenander, no players earned a black shirt. May not start handing them out until after games. He'll be on the field for games. And Nebraska's emphasis here, they want Midwest / local kids. That's going to be their priority because he believes they have a higher ceiling. They may not start out at a 4 or 5 star level, but they sure as hell can end up there. Case in point, Wisconsin. Pretty loaded show tomorrow. We're going to have the head Badger on. Barry Alvarez will be with us. We'll get caught up with him. One last thought here on the Husker Nation tour. JoJo Doman. He's a guy that, man, same knee, ACL twice. God, you feel for him because there's so much ability there.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy who loves it. He's really talented. He's got a busted to get back. He's expected to be cleared at the start of the season, when camp gets rolling in August. He may be out when it comes to some of the contact stuff, but he'll be able to begin strength and conditioning, and he's a guy that's circled you need long-term. Think about if you have Doman and Williams, and then you've got Antonio Reed to play with, and then you still have a guy like Gifford who's he is so hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Dixon on the outside. And then from a corner standpoint, I mean, I think a lot of these guys in Nebraska is doing it right. They're playing them at both spots. Be aggressive, be able to tackle, get the football back. That's the emphasis, that's the mantra. Problem or not with Bill Moose wanting to give that type of present to Oklahoma?
Good. I think that is the only gift that the Sooners deserve on the anniversary of the game of the century.
A 35-31 special.
Well, if you can run up the score on that, that'd be even better. But
I wonder where Oklahoma is going to be at.
And Nebraska, too.
Well, I'm not concerned about Nebraska in 3 or 4 years. I think they'll be fine. I think Lincoln Riley's a really smart coach, a good player. They're pretty loaded with talent. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one hell of a first year to live up to and not have people grumble. I think you understand, though, what he inherited.
Yeah.
You're not going to leave him with a Pinto. You left him with a vet that first year. This tweet coming out on Sean Becton. He's in Blair when it comes to the win total and that projection. I didn't come up here. I didn't leave Florida to come up here and lose. Nebraska very cognizant. Troy Walters specifically. And Ryan Held about the college football win predictor, be it Vegas or be it ESPN, saying 5.5. They're using it as motivation. We'll wind down a Tuesday. Thanks for your time. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time, big thanks to Mitch Sherman, Rick Pizzo for joining the show, and head trainer for Bud Crawford, Jamie Belt. Was fishing and he still took time. God love him. Barry Alvarez tomorrow. We're going to get Derek Peterson on the phone. I promise. We'll grab him tomorrow. Shuey will be in. We'll talk some U.S. Open. That's around the corner. Father's Day is happening. Now, I've already done the grill and smoker thing, so I'm set there. I get to see the fine work from HailVarsity.com and magazine. Mm-hmm. If you're a father or you have a father, the time is now to get dad that gift that keeps on giving the whole year, Clark. Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Get the premium content on the web. Here is what you got. HailVarsity.com/subscribe. Your chance to get the bundle thing working right. Hail Varsity's online and magazine subscriptions into the convenient package for the most comprehensive Husker coverage. 1 year subscription, 10 print issues, the annual football yearbook, unlimited premium access online. Average cost is $4.17 a month. It'll be billed annually at $50. 2 year subscription for $95. 3 year subscription, high five at $135. Can dial it toll free 855-3-HUSKER or HailVarsity.com/subscribe. Take care of dad for Father's Day. Or if you don't have kids, I don't care. I'm not going to judge. Just jump on it. Colton, what are you doing tonight?
I am off from the paper for the rest of the week because I'm
going
to
Arizona.
Yep.
You leave Thursday?
I leave Wednesday.
Lake Havasu?
Nope. Just going to Gilbert, Mesa, that little area. Mm-hmm. Probably hang out in Tempe and old Scottsdale and all that. So,
Are you sad that the co-eds at Arizona State are gone? Wait a minute. You got a gal. Never mind.
Yes.
Don't answer that.
I already told
you. Well, yes. I'm happy that they're gone. Doesn't matter to me. I don't know. Moving on.
I told my dad for Father's Day, I'm just going to bring him back craft beer from Arizona. And he already told me to make sure it's local. That way I don't pull a, well, it's from Arizona, but it's Busch Light. So
so how much crap are you two clowns talking about smuggling and edibles and all of that? Word gets back to me.
Only once. It only came up once.
Did you instigate it or was it Danny?
Yesterday was me. I think Saturday was Kranach.
Yeah, I heard about that too. take me through the Kranach discussion.
Oh, I think he just
He was just mad it was 7 a.m. and he was up. Both of his kids like finger painting the walls again.
He didn't say anything about the
dog
bird,
barking.
The no birds last Saturday that I know of. But
I swear that Laura, and Laura's the best ever. I love Kranak's wife. But while Kranak's on air, he probably pisses her off on a regular basis. She might grab his hand and get the old Zippo going just to see how long it takes for him to yelp. Tomorrow, Barry Alvarez, Derek Peterson, and Shuey. Talk to you tomorrow on Hail Varsity. Thanks.